7 by won't run in 2016. Mike Pence talks foreign policy. Cue the 2016 speculation for him. Dan Coats supports the president, a new high-tech approach to state government. And Pacer Paul George ignites a controversy. That plus a Pacer with a good news message that went viral and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 12, 2014. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Evan Bayh announced that he won't run for governor in 2016. It leaves Democrats with a wide open field. Here's how Bayh explained his decision.
To be something more than a figurehead, I wanted to really see what can I get done to help the people of our state. And under the current political climate, I thought that was just going to be difficult.
Is this a devastating blow for Democrats? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Jennifer Hollowell. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Jennifer Hollowell, are Republicans breathing a sigh of relief?
Well, I mean, we're certainly glad to hear the news, but I think the more important thing is that Democrats have to be really depressed by this. You know, Evan Bayh and the $10 million that he still has in his campaign account were the one big hope that they had, and now that's gone, and now they're looking at a potential field of Tier 2 and Tier 3 candidates, and they cannot be very happy.
One of the things he was talking about in that soundbite is the fact that with supermajorities of Republicans in the General Assembly and a simple majority required to override a veto, it would be hard to be effective. Yeah. But when you're sending that message for every Democrat, it's discouraging, isn't it?
Anybody who thought he was running for governor hasn't been paying attention for the last 6 months, okay? He has said repeatedly he's not running for governor.
No, he said it was unlikely.
Very unlikely.
He said he was giving it serious consideration.
Very, very, very unlikely. Look, the question of who's in and who's out and who's declared on what office for what year has provided a lot of political theater for us for the last couple of months, so it's been entertaining. But
in an otherwise boring election year.
No Democrat thought he was running. No Democrat who was in a position to know thought he was running for governor to begin with.
Is this much of a splash?
Yeah, I'll pick up on your thought that you asked Ann about, and that is that is a little depressing, I think, if you're a Democrat and you're hearing a candidate, a former governor, former senator, somebody who understands how the process works, say, it would be pretty difficult to get anything done, so I'm not going to run. That's got to be a little bit disappointing and a little bit disheartening. But, you know, there's a long time. I think Ann makes a good point. There's a long time between now and the election. So, you know, you won't see the majorities eliminated by the Democrats, and they may actually lose ground this time around. But things can happen between now and then. There's a lot of ground to cover.
We don't even know if Mike Pence is running since he can't make up his mind either.
We're going to get to that
here. I understand.
In just a second. Okay. One of the things Evan Bayh said is that he's already talked to Hillary and Bill Clinton, and if Hillary runs for president, he's willing to do anything he can to help. What's that tell you?
Well, it tells me that saying you would do anything, I'm not sure I would make that claim, but I think that it suggests that his interests are in Washington, in and around Washington. By that I mean his focus is on a national agenda. I will say, however, what probably was at all appealing about a gubernatorial office is now that he has had that experience and then been a member of the U.S. Senate, where even if you are in the majority, you really don't affect change in a day-to-day way that you can as a state's chief executive. So I think even when you're out of sync with the majorities in the House and Senate in the State House, even on a bad day as governor, just by definition, you probably can have a greater impact than you could in D.C. So I think that was the allure. But when you talk about the Clintons and doing anything, I think clearly his interest is probably on a national agenda and issues that face the nation as a whole.
All right. So you've got, among the names being mentioned, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott, John Gregg, who was the nominee last time, and Barron Hill, former congressman. Who's the favorite in that group?
I don't know that you have a favorite this far out. I think the concentration's got to be on 2014 at the moment, and I think that's the way everybody's focused. You'll see the field shape up after the 2014 election, because one way the Democrats can have an impact on this is to whittle away at those supermajorities, and that's where the emphasis has got to be.
Do you care who it is?
I don't think it matters, because Governor Pence has a strong record and will have an even stronger record come 2016. And like I said, I mean, what they're looking at are Tier 2, Tier 3 candidates, not people that are really exciting a lot of Democrats around the state.
I don't think that Mike Pence excites a lot of Republicans either, and especially with the divisive issues that he picks to spend his time and political capital on. So
he's got a
I'm
strong
not sure
record.
He's a Tier 1
well,
candidate. Oh, he has a strong
well,
record
John Gregg
being
his,
divisive.
In his defense,
no question.
John Gregg's losing margin was not that significant. He lost by, what was it, a surprisingly
small.
That's
because there's no enthusiasm
Mike Pence did
for
not,
Mike Pence.
Did not get over 50%. All right, sticking with Mike Pence now. President Obama unveiled his plan to defeat the Islamic State during a primetime speech from the White House this week. Before he did, Mike Pence spelled out his expectations in a rare take on foreign policy that prompted 2016 speculation involving the governor.
Too much has been given, and too much has been sacrificed for us to continue to shrink from our responsibilities abroad. But this cannot be one more speech followed by hesitation and indecision. As the old book says, if the trumpet does not sound a clear call, who will know to get ready for battle?
And Eleni, who was Mike Pence talking to in that speech?
Well, obviously, it must have been a religious group, because when he's quoting Corinthians, but of course the next sentence from that, if I'm not mistaken, is something about the soldiers marching into battle. Is he actually talking about putting ground troops on the ground after, more than a decade of Republican wars? It would have been nice, I think, if he really wanted to have some impact on foreign policy, to listen to the speech before he opened his mouth. Because he doesn't know that we have to have and speak as one voice with foreign policy, and he's too anxious to get the political kudos that come from talking out and quoting the Bible.
Well, he was speaking to a national group of broadcasters, so it's a national group, so that's a platform to address national and international issues, mm-hmm. I think. What's interesting to me is that it came in the same week when he went to Iowa, and some people were talking about his first trip to Iowa, but he went for a conference attended by governors that he would go to no matter where it was. But it seems like he was going out of his way to make sure he's part of the 2016 conversation.
Well, first of all, these comments were made right here in Indiana at the convention center. And as you mentioned, he was talking to a group of broadcasters who care about the hot topics of the day. And clearly that was one of the big issues of the day. And as governor of this state, it's entirely appropriate for him to weigh in on important issues that face our country.
Foreign policy issues when he knows nothing about them? I don't think it's
Absolutely.
Entirely appropriate at all.
He's
I really
informed
don't.
On,
I think he
on foreign
listened,
policy issues.
He
should have
listened
Congress
to the speech
and he's a governor of the state of Indiana.
Before he opened his mouth.
Well, although I pointed out in the show last time a topic like this came up, I do still have somewhere in my garage Evan Bayh's news release on the Tiananmen Square situation when he was governor. I mean, there is precedent for governors to weigh in
about sending ground troops into a foreign country.
Nobody was. It was a clear. There didn't have much to do with Indiana policy. We did just have this discussion, though, in a way, about a couple months ago during the governor's trip to Germany, and he was with the backdrop of the Brandenburg Gates talking about
foreign policy
issues. We talked about this deja vu all over again in terms of this speech. I don't think it's surprising for the reasons that Jennifer mentioned. This audience was about national policy. They weren't here to hear about necessarily the nuts and bolts of Indiana.
I've heard lots of Indiana governors tell national groups about what's going on in Indiana.
Well, he did say, he started that way, and then he transitioned into the national. So I don't think that necessarily is out of character. And again, I don't think he's eager to shut down speculation about a possible presidential bid, because just as was with Mitch Daniels a few years ago, you know, why take yourself out of the limelight when you can?
There's a big difference between the two.
Clearly, He likes this speculation.
Sure, if you don't dance, then nobody's going to pay attention. And he's gotten pretty good at taking a twirl around the floor. So, you know, there's no harm in it per se. If he wants to keep fostering that speculation, then he'll have to deal with people wondering what he's up to. But he also has that opportunity.
If he really goes for it, then he's got to decide which ballot he's going to be on, because he can't be on both.
There's
You're
that.
President
but
or
as
governor.
You said earlier, right. There's lots of time. And, I mean, frankly, look at the field. I don't think he should slam the door on speculation. I mean, there are folks who are interested in seeing him run, and he's clearly focused on
like
Indiana
Rick Paul
and moving the state
well,
forward.
Sarah
but
Palin.
It's okay.
I mean, there are people
Rick,
who
Rick
will now
run,
take
run
his call him. Because he is in the mix, who if he definitively, and this, I'll say this about any governor, took himself out of the mix. Who's on the phone? Mike Pence? I'll get back to him later.
There's a difference between taking yourself out of the mix and going out of your way. And which is what he's doing now.
He's not going
he's going out
of
his
way
to talk about issues about
which
he really doesn't
if
know
he missed,
very much.
If he missed, say, most of the session,
it was the it was
with
the top issue.
Iowa,
well,
then that's
he does
well,
or
that's
not.
A, you're right.
Was
that's
that like, sticking with the issue? Indiana Senator Dan Coats is supporting the president's plan to defeat the Islamic State. Prior to the speech, Coats said it would be a defining moment for Barack Obama. Coats is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he still has questions regarding the strategy, but told me that he liked what he heard.
What I liked is the president stood up and took leadership to a real threat. He defined that threat for the American people, and he stated the goal, and I needed to hear that, and we needed to hear that. That is not just manage, not just contain. We need to defeat this group that is out to kill us and out to change the civilized world.
John Katzenberger, is there a hidden message there?
I didn't hear one. I heard that he liked what he heard from the president, and it's something that the Republicans have talked about in their own case, and it sounds to me like it's pretty straightforward.
I thought it was interesting that he started with the positive, but then had a number of negatives. Unlike some people like John McCain, who started with the negative.
John McCain.
You have a
John
clearly
McCain's
the question
is
you think there is a message there. I'm not sure what it is. It's I guess it's not surprising that somebody who is oft quoted on foreign affairs issues because of his current committee assignments. And he did get a lot of attention and airplay with CNN and other places this week. Why he would leaven criticism or enthusiastic support with criticism? I mean, he is the loyal opposition, a Republican. Yeah. So I guess the fact that he's going to temper his praise doesn't necessarily. So keep with us, Jim. What is it you're looking for?
Well, I thought it was interesting because he went on CNN and he went on the Senate floor and said, and said, I have these expectations. And then immediately he said, my expectations were met. It seemed like he was trying to set something up there that he didn't then knock over.
Well, I mean, I think he clearly expressed some concern on other areas. But, you know, I mean, there are rare times when Republican leaders agree with the president. And I think it's good to acknowledge those. And in this case, he acknowledged them. But what remains to be seen is if the president can actually follow through and has the will to challenge this task. You know, he said a lot of the right things, and so that has been acknowledged.
You know, I think what you have here is you've got a moderate Republican who recognizes that we need one voice in foreign affairs, one commander-in-chief. And he had the courtesy to listen to the speech before he opened his mouth. And what he said was that this is the right approach.
You haven't always called Dan Coats a moderate, have you?
Well, compared to Mike Pence, I think I would, yes. Yes. Compared to Mike Pence, everybody to the left of Attila the Hun might be a moderate. But what my point on this is that he is... He, unlike Mike Pence, does not want to see the commitment of ground troops again for another Mideast war.
Right.
And what we're seeing here is how do you deal with this situation with countries which aren't even in the last century without that? And I think this is a good strategy for him to employ, and I think Dan Coats recognizes that.
I think what's ironic is, you know, President Obama has spent years complaining about the conflict that he inherited from President Bush, and Anne has certainly made that point several times on the show today. And it looks like, you know, what we may end up seeing is President Obama doing the same thing and leaving his successor a conflict left to do.
You know, we started in there, and if you don't read history and don't learn from history, there have been wars, for example, in Afghanistan going back centuries, and no one has ever won them. And yet, there goes George Bush into it nonetheless.
John.
That's the problem.
And actually, I think your question, the more I think about it, cuts to a reality about Washington politics these days. It has become so polarized, and so the automatic reaction to anything,
right.
Doesn't matter what the policy, could be domestic policy, economic policy, foreign policy, healthcare reform, where's the president? We're over here.
Yeah.
And it goes both ways.
Is
when
it,
you
is
have
it Friday?
That
no,
when you,
it's Saturday.
That when you have somebody who actually says some of these things sound logical, people tend to look for what's the catch or the hidden message or the trick. When
cynics.
In fact,
cynics do that.
Maybe because it's so rare. And that's what's sad, I guess, maybe about the state of federal and national politics.
To the State House. The governor revealed some big changes at the State House this week.
In the basement of the State House, hidden from public view, there is a shiny new technology center. The Pence administration calls it the Management and Performance Hub. It's home to new computer equipment that Budget Director Chris Atkins demonstrated for the media. He pulled up statewide accident statistics in a matter of seconds.
In the past, it would have taken days or weeks to sift through the data and gather the information that we can just gather sitting here looking at this map.
It will help policymakers and the public figure out how well state resources are being spent. The idea is to locate trends and respond appropriately.
Welcome to the future of state government.
In a space that once housed 8 state workers, 16 will now sift through public information that will eventually be posted on the state website.
We're committed to having the most efficient and effective and transparent state government in America, and this is going to give us the tools to do that.
Much of the money for this technology center came from a Lilly Endowment grant. Some will come from cost savings that will result from better use of taxpayer dollars.
John Schwannis, is that a wise approach?
Well, I can't, you know, watch a newscast or pick up a newspaper anymore without hearing about the value of big data in terms of government, in terms of business reform. So I guess this sounds like our attempt as a state to get into the realm of big data. Whether it's an effective or wise use of resources, it seems to me, is what data they choose to crunch. Now, if it's navel gazing, I mean, with this technology, it seems we could probably answer a lot of questions that nobody is even asking.
One thing that's going to happen is reporters and people in the public are going to be able to get questions answered without having to go through bureaucrats. It'll all be on the website.
Well, if it is, that's fine. I'd hate to think, it's just like a call tree and we'll route your question to a computer, and if it can understand your voice prompts, you might get an answer. But, I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious. If they use it to tackle significant challenges, it's useful. If they just look what we can do to make pretty graphics, not so much.
Okay. There's some reports question the cost of this. But the Pence administration asserts that it will pay for itself.
Well, it may, but I don't see a clear path in how you do that and make it pay for itself in a concrete way. Now, you may be able to attribute some savings or some reduction in force or whatever it is to make that balance, but really you're spending money here to enhance your data collection and presentation capability and analysis capability, and I don't know that that would necessarily save money unless you use that data and then to eliminate a program, say, and then attribute that savings to this program. And I don't think that's an appropriate comparison. So, you know, the cost is what it is. The question is, how much did it cost? Because there have been estimates that have been all over the place, and, you know, we don't know yet exactly how much it cost.
Well, they supplied figures, and the biggest cost is $500,000 a year for the software, and they say that that's in the budget.
Good. I mean, you know, you're using some Lilly Endowment money, and that's certainly helpful on this. And if it makes the government more efficient, that's good. It's not going to make the government more transparent. I mean, with the ethical violations we've had with this administration, we need to do a lot more than computerize the data to get the transparency we need.
Well, the transparency will depend on how the computer is supplied with information. But
well, I don't think we're going to do it on the net worth of state legislators, for example. So I don't think it's going to be as transparent as we need it to be.
You got to keep up with the times, right?
Absolutely. Indiana's leading the way. One of the only states doing something like this. You know, Governor Pence said this is government moving at the speed of business. And I don't see how you can look at that and say it's not going to be more transparent. It is, in its essence, transparency. And it will make government more efficient and more effective. And, I mean, I think that's always a good thing and certainly worth it.
Well, one thing Ann cited as a plus gives me pause, the notion of having grants from a private sector entity such as even a foundation. I'm not sure why that strikes me as, well, certainly a departure from the norm. Usually it's the public sector giving seed money and grant money to the private sector. And we see more and more of this. You know, this trip is being funded by this entity, this initiative. And I don't know, it seems... Get back to me in a year or two, and I'll tell you why that seems unsettling a little bit to me.
Will do. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, what do you think of the state's new technology center? Your choices are A, it's an unnecessary expense, B, it's a big advancement, or C, I don't care about the inner workings of government. Last week's question was, did Jim Irsay deserve more punishment? 35% said yes, 65% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana Pacer Paul George sparked national outrage this week with tweets about suspended NFL player Ray Rice. One tweet said, I don't condone hitting women, but if she ain't tripping, I ain't tripping. He ended by saying, let the man play. He also tweeted, if you in a relationship and a woman hit you first and attacking you, then you obviously ain't beating her. George later tweeted an apology. Let me apologize to the women and to the victims of domestic violence. People, my intent was not to downplay the situation. It didn't play well on talk radio.
If Paul George really understands this, then Paul George and his team should be setting up a press conference so that he can be looked in the eye and seen, okay, we believe you.
That's Dan Dockich. Ann Delaney, does this point up the need for more education on domestic violence?
Oh, my gosh. You know, whether you like it or not, these guys are role models, okay? And young men look up to them. And that tweet was, it was unconscionable. And the idea that even if she had struck him first, look at the difference in size. It's absolutely ludicrous. And I'm with Dan Dockich. You know, the apology that's there speaks to me that the management said, you've got to clean this up, issue an apology. I'd like to know that he understands why he was wrong and why this is wrong and have him do something positive about it.
The Pacers also issued an apology on his behalf. Is that enough?
Well, I mean, I don't know that anyone's mind is going to change after that, regardless of his apology. But, you know, think before you tweet. I mean, it's horribly, horribly disappointing. And, you know, the only positive thing I can see out of this is that the Pacers did, you know, deal with it directly and clearly. But
does this hurt George's reputation?
Oh, sure. I think so. How could it not? You know, he's already nursing this broken leg that's going to cost him the season. Why, when you're nursing a broken leg, would you go and shoot yourself in the foot?
The other foot.
Now I guess he's totally hobbled, but it's going to hurt his reputation.
Does it hurt ticket sales?
No, I don't think it'll hurt ticket sales, but I do think it offers, the whole Ray Rice thing offers hope for awareness, and hopefully from that awareness will come a positive outcome as opposed to this perpetuation of stereotypes and attitudes that are wrong.
Because what's so fundamentally wrong about what he tweeted is his complete lack of understanding about
right.
it. And the idea that you could condone that. I mean, I don't know how he got to a mature age with that attitude.
Yeah,
and then, you know, the Ravens then on Thursday night dedicated, a bunch of the Ravens players dedicated their victory to Rice, which...
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, another Pacers star made news on Twitter this week. Roy Hibbert posted a picture of a policeman with the message, just seen an Indy police officer pull over, go into his trunk, and give a homeless guy a pair of shiny boots. It went viral. Hibbert also tweeted IMPD saying he would like to know the officer's name or badge number. Hibbert said he would like to do something for him. His identity remains a mystery. Jennifer Hollowell, should Roy Hibbert give Paul George tips on how to use Twitter?
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, this is great. You know, IMPD officers risk their lives and do great things for the community all the time. And, you know, and it doesn't always get attention. So it's great that somebody like Hibbert was there to bring this news out. And on that last point, I do have reason to believe that a connection has been made. And so there may be some new news on that.
So that Hibbert may actually do something for the officer. That's nice to know.
I think that's great, and especially in that in the post-Ferguson world where there's been so much animosity. When you have officers and the majority, the vast majority right. of whom are doing exactly what they ought to do, it yeah. ought to be recognized.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.